Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Seeking Witchcraft. I'm your host, Ashley, and today I have on Iris Anya Moon. Welcome to the show. Feel free to introduce yourself.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Hi, folks. I'm Iris Anya Moon. My pronouns are she and they, and I am located in Northern California. And I guess the shortest bio for myself is I'm an author, a witch, a teacher, a poet, and an initiate in the reclaiming witchcraft tradition. So, and I've been practicing some semblance of witchcraft for more than 20 years, which is frightening. So I'm happy to be here.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. So before we get into today's topic, I just want to talk a little bit more about your background. So two things you mentioned. One is that you mentioned that you have a couple of books that you've written. And then the second is that you've mentioned that you are part of the reclaiming tradition. So I guess my first question is, do you have a general theme of books that you write about, or like what can listeners expect to find when they look you up?
Absolutely. So I have written, this is where I always forget my own thing. But I have, I think 10 books are done right now. I think 8 of them are out. And so I typically write about either deities, so building relationship with deities, mostly Greek deities, but not always. I also tend to write about environmental activism. I tend to write about my tradition reclaiming. And also anything revolving around, while some people would call it self-care, I call it self-devotion. So things like that are my main things, but also, you know, there's more coming that might veer off that path. So, and in terms of reclaiming, so everyone asks this question.
I've been to a reclaiming ritual in the past before. So I have a little bit of experience with the reclaiming tradition, and it was super cool. The way they were acknowledging the land and everything as part of the circle and the activism portion. So I have some experience, but I know there's probably some people listening that are like, what's that?
Yeah. I mean, really, when I was asked, when the first book I was asked to write was on reclaiming witchcraft. And let me tell you, not intimidating at all to write about your tradition for your very first book. not at all. That is sarcasm, in case anybody didn't catch that. So when I was starting to write that, I looked up what people thought reclaiming was online, and that was fascinating. So I will speak to how I define reclaiming, recognizing that it is an evolving tradition, and it is also like a global tradition. It's in most continents. So everybody has their own definition, I think. But the usual tagline that folks will use, or that I've used, is that it's an eco-feminist tradition that seeks to unify spirit and politics. So that's a good tagline, and I think it encompasses a lot of things. It is a tradition that was born out of, you know, the Bay Area, when it was a time of activism and human potential and the resurgence of the goddess and other sort of, you know, features of that time in the 60s, 70s, sort of in there. There was the anti-nuclear movement, things like that. And a lot of folks were, you know, getting together and sort of this Venn diagram of, you know, witches, pagans, and activism. And, you know, Starhawk was in the mix and was writing about this and started to have gatherings with folks to, you know, sort of teach folks how to do their own rituals. And that became Elements of Magic, which is a class that I'm actually going to teach tomorrow night. And Elements of Magic created all of these folks that were interested in learning more stuff. So reclaiming sort of grew from there. This is a very simple background. But reclaiming is, at its root, about activism and about self-empowerment, and also about how we can effectively make change in the world in the ways that we can. There are, like I said, groups all around the world, the US, in North America, Europe, Australia, South America, and if I didn't say Europe already, I'll say it again. And one of the things that I think is important to know about reclaiming is that it has it's a document called the Principles of Unity. So if you want to know what reclaiming witches are about, that is something to look up. It is a document that was created because in the beginning of all this like reclaiming business, everything was growing so quickly and people sort of felt like they weren't in touch with the folks who sort of started everything. So long story short, there was a Principles of Unity document created, which seeks to and continues to evolve. It includes all the things that, you know, if you agree to these things, then you can call yourself a reclaiming witch. You don't have to be initiated. You don't have to take certain classes. But these are the things that we agree to create a connection across all the different places that we are, and to also spread power and spread knowledge across different groups that will form and are continuing to form to this day. So in summary, I would say that reclaiming witchcraft is an ecstatic and evolving tradition, and it is best experienced versus me talking about it. But I personally started with reclaiming just by reading Spiral Dance and then realizing, oh, the people in that book are real. And then moving out to California and meeting those people, a lot of them, and then finding myself at a witch camp and going, wow, I'm at home. So I teach a lot of classes in reclaiming traditions, but there's also tons of information online. And if you're interested in that, find things written by reclaiming folks, preferably, because like I said, it's an immersive, ecstatic, and ever-evolving tradition. So checking out the folks who are part of that growth and movement is, I think, the best way to go. We also have a lot of public rituals in the Bay Area, so come on out and find us. Yes.
Amazing. Thank you so much for going into that. Like I said, I've been to a reclaiming ritual and it was a really cool experience. They did a witch festival back where I'm at. So Yeah. And also it was really great to have you explain that too, because I know reclaiming is not as publicly known, I think, as some of the other, you know, mainstream quote unquote forms of witchcraft, like eclectic Wicca or initiatory Wicca. So thank you so much for going through that.
Well, it also is so expansive and sort of ever evolving, like I've said a couple of times. So it's hard to sort of nail it down and to sort of be like, here's what it is. I mean, there's so many folks in the tradition, and things I'm going to talk about today are not things that everybody in reclaiming thinks. So I think it's really best experienced by, you know, meeting some folks.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for discussing a bit about reclaiming. I know that people don't hear about this one. Like a lot of people have heard of Starhawk, Spiral Dance, but I do mention reclaiming is so widespread. They did a cool little festival where I live. So I think it's cool to bring it up and know there are other options out there in the witchcraft world aside from, you know, the ones that people generally talk about when they immediately think of witchcraft, either like eclecta or an initiatory tradition.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So on that note, let's go ahead and we'll transition to what we're going to be talking about today, which is how to build and develop a relationship with deity.
Yes, I'm so excited. This is my favorite thing to talk about.
Yes, yes, yes. When we got connected and you brought this idea up to come on the podcast, I was so excited about it because I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this is something that people ask me about all the time of how can they develop this relationship with the gods or a god or anything out there. And I haven't had the best answers because I think there's a little bit of a personal touch that people need for this. But I am super excited to delve into this and give people more ideas and hear this discussion about how to, you know, be able to develop these relationships.
Absolutely. I agree. It's one of the first questions I get too. And I think sometimes it's framed as, oh, I have to have a relationship with a deity. And I would just say real quickly, no, you don't. So
that's true. You don't have to.
No, you do not have to. But I'm a big fan, so I'm going to promote it. So
well, I, I guess this might sound not silly, but some people might not even know what the word deity means. Yep. And I part of the reason that actually came up was because when I was talking to, it was funny, I was talking to my personal trainer about that I was going to record an episode about this topic. And he was like, what's a deity? And I was looking at him like, you don't know what that is. And so, yes, for those who don't know what a deity is, I guess we should probably start there.
That's probably a good place to start. So, so deity in its, you know, definition in a dictionary is a god or a goddess. So a spiritual being, a supernatural being, it probably can expand to include other things that I'm not thinking of in this moment, but that's the most frequent answer that I would give.
Yeah. And I would agree with that. And then I know there's usually a follow-up question that people will say, well, I've heard about, and I, God, if I say this word wrong, I am so sorry. People say, well, what are these different pantheons I hear about? Mm-hmm. And like, they'll hear about Greek or Roman or Egyptian. And I'm like, well, that's kind of defined in the first part of that.
They're gaggles of gods. I would say that they're, you know, they're the groupings of gods. They're the families, you could say, of different gods in different cultures, and how they've sort of been, how they sort of interrelate, how they've been sort of put together. Because some pantheons in the way that they're sort of presented today aren't quite consistent amongst people. So, but for this conversation, pantheons are groups of gods within a culture. And that is the easiest way to say that.
Yes. And then I think so kind of going into these basic questions related to this, and anybody listening to this here is vibrating, it is my cat next to me. I'm so sorry. She's purring up right next to the microphone and she just wants to stay here for this conversation. Yeah, so I hear people talk about how they want to start working with a deity, but they're not really sure who to start with or if they should start with a different pantheon or if they should see if a deity calls them. And so I guess, what do you think would be the best way for somebody to start this relationship? Should they look into their lineage or their family history? Should they see if they've had any signs? Should they pick a pantheon and be like, that one looks cool? Like, what would you
think? Mm-hmm. So I think any of those answers are fine. What I would say for me and myself and the way that I look at it now is I would actually start and take a step and go, why am I doing this first? You know, what's the point of like getting to know a deity? Is it because I feel like I have to, or is it because I feel like I want to cultivate a relationship with an energy or a god or goddess or et cetera? I think that's actually the best question to begin with. And even if you don't have a clear answer for that, I think it's something to just think about. Because personally, I think that we start to ask that question of like, who should I work with, when we've either been interested in a deity, we're already like, Hecate looks cool. Or we've had signs or things that seem like signs that have sort of drawn us into that direction. So thinking at first, you know, I think all of these things are completely reasonable reasons to seek this out. I think that it is. So one of the things that's really true about me and the way I look at this is that building a relationship with a deity is like building a relationship with anyone. It's like dating. You know, it is a lot like, that person looks cute. I want to get to know them. And how do you do that with a human? So I think that that's actually where I would start with all this and just sit and consider that for a second before you sort of move on to whatever the next step might be.
Yeah, I think that it's great describing it kind of like a relationship of getting to know somebody, because I want to talk about the flip side of that where working with a deity doesn't mean that you are tied to them for your life.
No.
Sometimes working with different deities is just a temporary thing.
Yes.
Either you might need them for a particular moment in your life. Maybe you're working with Aphrodite because you need some love. Or maybe you want to build a lifelong connection with Hecate and you work towards that. But there are times where deities can say, okay, our work has ended here. And that's okay too.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, sort of what begins all of this, I think, is a need to deconstruct the idea of, you know, monotheism and the idea that there's one God that you commit to for the rest of your life, right? A lot of folks have been exposed to Christianity and that sort of situation. And so it seems like that's what we should be aiming for. And that's not necessarily what we should be aiming for. You know, just like in human relationships, not everyone is monogamous. Not everyone wants to just hang out with one person for the rest of their lives. And that's great. So I think the biggest thing in all of this is thinking about what kind of relationship do you want to have? And then sort of going like, okay, now who might I want to share that with? Who do I want to invest my time and resources and attention with? Because I agree with you. I don't think I have worked with many deities that I've only worked with for work projects, right? Like, or for a certain class or for like a certain witch camp that I taught at. But then, you know, we sort of see each other on the street. We're like, hey, you know, we don't really like talk really deeply anymore, but there's still a connection. So I think framing this all in the human sort of relationship sort of scenario is really helpful and also creates a bit more access than I think sometimes books make it sound like. Sometimes it makes it sound like, you know, deities are way up high and inaccessible, and we need to be really proper and really dedicated and committed all the time. And I don't think that's always true.
Yeah, I love your mention of Christianity with deities, because I came from Catholicism, which is a monotheistic religion. So mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. I first got interested, or I should say when I was first becoming more serious in witchcraft and Wicca, I remember hearing about a god and a goddess, and mm-hmm. coming from a religion where there's just one god, I was like, what do you mean there's two of them now? Like that was a little bit of a harder pill for me to swallow, to see if that really vibed with me. Cause initially I was like, whoa, what do you mean there's two now? And mm-hmm. That doesn't even touch on polytheism and are all gods one god, or are they all separate gods? That's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I remember when I was really going through this and seeing how this vibed with me, it took some time, and it wasn't anything that I was forced into believing by any means. I had my own experiences that led me to my own conclusions. But yeah, sometimes you really just have to take some time. And if right now you're listening to this and you're coming from a similar background of like, oh, you know, I was raised with Jesus as the only God, really. Mm-hmm. And this idea seems scary or not feasible for you, think about it. Like, don't feel like you have to make a decision instantly of what your beliefs are. I think the spiritual journey is long lasting. There was something else that you said at the end here now, and now of course it's slipping my mind, but it was the last thing you mentioned, and maybe it'll come back to me later.
Yeah. I mean, I think, there's so many things to talk about this, because my brain, you know, also expands every time I talk about this. You know, thinking about your experience with Catholicism too, I also was raised Catholic, and, you know, my big thing was Mary. I was big into Mary, and I still am to a certain extent. So what else was I talking about? I was talking about things like, you don't have to choose just one. You can go slow. You can... Yeah, who knows what we just said? So
who knows? That's okay.
Thanks, editor. So thank you. I have a whole outline here that I like usually go through. So yeah, who knows where we're at in it? So yeah, it's like dating. I did say it's like dating, which I think is real talk.
Yeah, it's okay. It'll come to me later, and I'll be like, oh yes, this other thing.
It's all good. All good.
So, for people who are just starting out and looking to build a connection with deity, what would you recommend in terms of, I don't know, is there like a starter god? A starter god? I know that sounds awful. I'm sorry.
Oh, I love that. No, I think that's great. I think that's such a valid question. So first of all, like, because let's see, when I first started out, I had a meditation that I did, and I can't remember what the goal of it was, but I met a deity in that who didn't have a name, and who eventually I figured out was Gaia, or at least I think that's true. So I get it. You sometimes, when you're thinking about deities and wanting to build something with them, who's a safe one, who's an easy one, and who is somebody that I... you know, I'm not offending by starting out with them and not knowing what I'm doing necessarily. I think any deity is going to offer things that might not be easy. So I'm not sure there's just one. So what I might offer is thinking about any deities that seem interesting to you. I think that that's a good way to begin. And again, I kind of go back to that whole like dating metaphor, because I think that's real. And I think it's easier to understand. Like, oh, I like this deity because they do this, or they're involved with this, or I learned about them in this story. Like, move towards that and see what happens. You don't have to stay there forever. You can do just one date. You don't have to do a whole series of them. but maybe just going in a direction that's just interesting. I know a lot of folks started out with Egyptian gods after reading like Book of Shadows by Phyllis Carrot or other gods from other books. I think that if you're interested, that's a good starting point.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I also think if people are having some trouble needing to brainstorm, you can look into your family lineage, you know, look at history and see perhaps, you know, if you go far back enough, you could see where your ancestors are from and if there's any deities associated with them.
Absolutely.
You can also look at the signs in your life. And I say this with a grain of salt because not everything is a sign. The other part of that is that sometimes signs are only for you to understand. And so
yes.
I see a lot of people going on the internet saying, oh, is this a sign? Is this a sign? Mm-hmm. And it can be validating to get that second opinion from somebody on the internet, even if it's a complete stranger.
Absolutely.
But sometimes these are really just meant for you and you are going to be the only one who fully understands if it really is or not.
Yes. I would say that, like, I have a personal story about that. My name is Iris Anya because of a story like that, because I took a sign as something that meant I was going to work with Iris. And so this is my story for this. Once upon a time, I had gone to California Witch Camp with Reclaiming and I fell in love and I was like, okay, I'm going to take all the classes. And so I went to sign up for the class and I was like, I was so nervous. I wouldn't know anybody. It was in the middle of nowhere. I've never done this before. And I was, you know, filling out the registration form because we had to fill it out with pen and paper back then. And I was filling it out and then I looked outside and it was the most brilliant rainbow I'd ever seen. And it just struck me in that moment. And so the first thing that often happens with deity relationships is you go onto Google and I typed in rainbow goddess because I didn't know, as you do. Sure. So, I mean, it works. And up popped Iris. And the way she was described were words that people have used to describe me in the past. And I actually can't find what I found originally because it's probably changed since then. But that was how I sort of said, I think you're interesting. I think we need to get to know each other.
I love that.
I think that is completely plausible. And then Aphrodite sort of hit me over the head with things. So, you know, everyone's a little different. And I think that staying open to, I think signs is fair, but also even if you're creating the signs, I think that's still something to follow.
So let me ask, how can somebody just discern if a deity is calling out to them or if somebody's just simply drawn to them?
I actually don't know if you can. I think that what you will probably find is that if you follow that and it becomes clear that you are learning things from it, that you are seeing ways that your life is shifting because of that relationship, that seems like a call. But also you could do that just by working with somebody you find in a book. So I'm not actually sure if it needs to be validated if it's real or not. I think that learning and growing and finding yourself is valid in a whole bunch of different ways.
That's fair. Well, then let me ask the other side of that then, so in your opinion, when, let's say somebody wants to work with Hecate, for example, and they pass by a billboard on their way to work every day that has a giant key on it. And then they think, okay, well that's her reaching out. But in reality, it's just a key. Maybe it's a real estate agent, who knows?
Sure. Absolutely.
And they reach out and they try to work with her, but they get no response. Yep. Or they're not sure if they get a response. Like, how would you recommend somebody kind of navigate this? Like, I ask because I know sometimes people are nervous to work with deities because they think bad things are going to happen if they annoy them or reach out to them. And I'm like, no, you're probably going to be okay.
You know what? Thank you so much for saying this because I hear this a lot too. And so here's what I would say is that, again, like any relationship, some of them just don't work. And so what I would say is that, you know, when I get the question of, oh, I'm reaching out and nothing's happening, I often, you know, pose the question back. Well, how are you contributing to the relationship? Are you, you know, looking into their stories to sort of get to know them? Are you perhaps creating an altar space? Are you leaving offerings? Are you invested in a relationship that doesn't just look like I told the deity things and they should do stuff for me? I don't think deities are gumball machines. That's something I often say. So I would look at all those too. What are you bringing to the relationship too? Because I think the gods are much more interested if it's reciprocal than if it's one-sided.
Yes. So I have a deity project that I give to my students when I'm training them in Outer Court. Mm-hmm. And it's to work with a deity every day for a month. Mm-hmm. And actually, we make it kind of fun. We make them pick a deity that they have never worked with before. They have no real knowledge of. They have to do a little bit of homework and give my high priest and I a little list of some deities. And then we choose for them from that list. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes in the past, we've been like, yeah, no, you're not doing any of these. And we give them a completely different deity. So far, the people that we've done that to have been really excited of the deity that we've given them. But
good.
In this assignment, what we have people do is they have to do their research and on the deity that's selected, and then they have to work with them every single day for an entire month. And in that month, they have to do something for a quote-unquote sacrifice. And along with that, the purpose of this ritual is, or not the purpose of the ritual, but part of the ritual is that they cannot ask for anything. It's literally just for them to introduce themselves to this deity and see if perhaps they can just acknowledge them or have some sort of friendly relationship with. And the sacrifice, just going back on that a little bit, it's not, you know, it's not like a something like that. Sure. It's something they're going to have to do every single day for a month. Mm-hmm. So we tell them, pick something that is a sacrifice in some way, but it's something that you can do every day. So
yes.
For example, 10 minutes of meditation in the morning, exercising every day for a couple of minutes, going outside and saying something to the sun, you know, planting something in the ground if the weather is nice, picking up litter outside, like something that is in service of that God that can relate to them.
Yes.
But something you could do that takes a little bit of your energy. And whenever we've given this assignment, we've had people who have continued to work with these deities, even though they had no base knowledge of them and have had fantastic relationships with them.
Yes.
So just something for people to consider if anybody's sitting here thinking, well, like, how do I start a relationship with a deity? I don't know anything about them, or I don't know who to pick. That's something you could do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is, you know, one of my favorite quotes right now is by Mary Oliver, and it goes, attention is the beginning of devotion.
Oh, I love that.
And I think that is what really folds into all of this. You know, how can I pay attention? How can I offer my attention? Our attention is, you know, in such short supply these days, or just, you know, all over the place. It's such a gift. And I think that is, for me, what's important to remember in deity practices and deity relationships is that, you know, when we give them attention, it's not about getting something back. It's also keeping them alive. And to a certain extent, keeping ourselves alive too in that story and in that interaction.
Absolutely. I think we can, I have so many things I can say about this, about having a worship relationship versus one where you are paying them in some way and asking for something back. But I do want to take a short break, and we'll be back in a minute to continue the conversation.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we were just talking about this concept of having a reciprocal relationship with the deity, or potentially not having a reciprocal, well, kind of relationship, having it more as a worship. So I guess, I don't know. I think in terms of this concept, I was going to ask like which one you would recommend for beginners, but I think it really also just depend on the person and the reason for their relationship with the deity, and possibly the deity themselves too.
Right. And I think that's all part of the getting to know them process, you know, sitting around and making space for them in your lives. And, you know, one of the best I would say the best practices in the beginning of forming a relationship is just listening or just being, you know, being in places where you can imagine their energy or imagine them being, you know, sinking into the stories, reading different translations of things. You know, all of that is figuring out what to do next and what this relationship might look like. But also part of it, I think, too, is you really getting honest with yourself and saying, like, here's what I want, and just being honest about that. Because like in any, you know, any relationship that you have, you know, if you have expectations that you're not saying, it's just setting yourself up for resentment or not a good time. And so, again, I always want to bring it back to like, what would you do with a human? How would you do this? Or how would you hopefully do this with a human? Because that is building a foundation from which who knows what's going to happen next. My deity relationships have all been unfolding in ways that I would never have predicted from the beginning, ever, absolutely ever. I never wanted to work with Aphrodite. I didn't. And I now have tattoos and a book and a whole bunch of work that I've done with her. And but that was because I think in the beginning, I started with listening more than I asked for things. I listened to see what was true and what was present and what was interesting for me to follow and to sink into.
So with this listening, was it more of just looking for things in your life or meditations?
I think for me, listening, I would define that as sitting at an altar and just being there. I think it is also listening with my eyes and senses to what might pop up in the world around me. I clearly remember sitting at a coffee shop in San Rafael and thinking about, I guess, deities. I can't remember exactly what I was thinking about, but all I knew is that I looked out the window and there was a store called Aphrodite that I had never noticed before.
I love when stuff like that happens.
Right? I love that too. You're like, magic is real. It's real. And so things like that also. I once heard of a practice, you know, coming out of some sort of spiritual weekend or magical adventure that is kind of immersive and coming out of it. And, you know, the first three signs that you see are things that you need to know. So if you are interested in a certain deity, maybe just asking, you know, could you offer me some signs? That might be really helpful for me to see. And it works.
Yeah.
Often.
Yeah. So thank you for explaining about sitting at your altar and, you know, just listening. And I think that's so important. And reminds me of one of the things I tell my students a lot, that meditation is so incredibly important to do. Mm-hmm. And part of that reason is because when you're doing things like sitting at your altar or just, you know, if you're in the woods having a quiet moment, being able to disconcern the voice in your head mm-hmm. versus a spiritual voice or something that's not you, something that's other.
Yes.
And that comes with practice. I mean, sometimes the deities will just drop right in and
sure.
they can be loud if they want to be loud, mm-hmm. but, once you get a meditative practice and you have a little bit of experience with that, it becomes a lot easier to kind of separate the two of what is you and what is not you. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean this in like a, there's voices in my head sort of way. Mm-hmm. I mean this in a spiritual way. You know, that little spiritual voice that you hear that you're like, that has all the wisdom of the world that you're like, wow, I didn't come up with that.
Right. And I think that that's such an important thing to say. So thank you so much, because I think that there is, you know, not as much emphasis on the idea that knowing ourselves is actually really important to knowing magic and knowing deity. Because if we don't know ourselves, we don't know the difference. We don't, you know, if my body feels really good in this certain space and I know that I'm grounded, I now know when I go into another space and I don't feel like that, that means I'm not grounded. And maybe I should think about doing that. I think that that is just imperative. But again, it goes back to human relationships. We also need to know ourselves in order to know how we relate to someone else or how we don't relate to someone else. But it comes with looking at ourselves too. It's not just an outward look. It's an internal look too.
Exactly. And it's very easy to explain this in terms of human relationships, because that's how we can relate to the gods and understand them and how our relationship is to them. And so I totally use that too. but I want to say for people also who are trying to first start out with a relationship with deity, remember too that deities are not human. Mm-hmm. They don't think the way that we do. They don't make sense mm-hmm. a lot of the mm-hmm. time. And it's easy for us to humanize them, mm-hmm. but it's so much more vast than I think mm-hmm. we'll ever be able to understand. And so for us, I think it's easy to have a more human way. Mm-hmm. But if you ever get a weird message that you're like, what the hell was that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keeping this in mind of they're not human, and they're sometimes they do their own thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, I will admit that like in my personal practice, I consider myself divine too. And so I don't necessarily see a hierarchy in this conversation. I see it as me recognizing the divine outside and inside of myself. So, and I also think the gods have way more perspective than I do and way more history than I do. So I think that that is also true. But my thing is just that, you know, in this conversation of like the gods aren't human, and that's true, I would just love for folks to remember that you can be in devotion without being in supplication to deity. Personally, that's my opinion. I think that is a good starting point. I'm not to say that I haven't been put in my place sometimes, but also I don't think we need to think about deity as being scary necessarily, because then people have these conversations. They're like, I don't know what to do, and how do I do this, and how do I do this right? And, you know, just jump in and do it as opposed to, I don't know, hesitating because of things that have happened to other folks. It's not the same for everybody.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as people get into their deity worship too, especially if they're worshiping multiple ones, I think they learn mm-hmm. over time, like yeah. what the deity wants, and they hear that voice a little bit stronger every day. Mm-hmm. For example, I know with Hecate, she does not like sharing her space. So if you have an altar and you have, let's say, Hecate on one side, and you know what, why not, let's say they have Pan on the other side, mm-hmm. Something's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. Either mm-hmm. you're gonna come in there one day and things are gonna be knocked over, or the energy is gonna be weird or something. You will find out that she does not like sharing her space, and that she generally wants her own altar and her own space. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, I don't know, siblings, eventually one day they might want their own room and they don't want to mm-hmm. share with their little brother or sister anymore. You learn things with that over time working with deity.
I agree. And I think that is true. And I think that goes back to the whole listening thing and really, you know, getting to know somebody, because you'll pick up on that stuff, but it takes time. And you'll also learn that Aphrodite wants altars everywhere. And so that is going to be a whole conversation to have too.
That sounds about right.
She's everywhere. You start with one. I can't even, I've lost track of how many I have. So
eventually the whole home just becomes for
in her mind. Yes, absolutely. Also, don't take her shopping. That's just a setup for,
yeah.
I mean, set up for really great, beautiful things, but also, yeah, she doesn't have credit cards and things like that. So,
no. So are there any precautions or considerations mm-hmm. one should take before attempting mm-hmm. to connect with the deity?
I mean, I think that, you know, we talked over some things that I think would be helpful in terms of sort of getting to know yourself. And also, I think maybe this hasn't been said directly, but thinking about whether or not you have space to create a relationship with a deity. I think a lot of us, I know I have done this, have gone into relationships/deity relationships just full of excitement, and I can't wait to do this, and I'm going to do all of these things, and it's going to be so amazing, and I don't need to sleep, and I can just do all this stuff, and I'm going to feel so good, like new relationship energy, right? Instead of thinking, wait, do I actually have the time, resources, and, you know, whatever mental capacity to build a relationship? I take this work really seriously, and I do really think about, okay, is this something I can take on right now? And I think that's the first thing to think about, because that will often save you troubles down the road. If you can't commit to something, then that's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Maybe another time. But starting there, I think, is really helpful. And I also think being really clear about what you want from this deity relationship is also the best starting point to avoid things down the road. Being clear that I want to work with somebody who does this or helps me with this. And if you're not getting that from the relationship, then you know, okay, I'm either missing something, or maybe this is just not for me right now. So, and either of those are fine.
Exactly. Yes, definitely. So I guess one thing that people do when they start working with a deity is they start thinking about things like offerings, mm-hmm. or, as I was talking about earlier, sacrifice of yes. some sort. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question, and so the basic question of this is, what role do offerings play in nurturing a relationship with deity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think offerings are one of the first things I talk about when, you know, starting any relationship with any god, right after altars. I think about offerings, or I like to create the framework of offerings as little gifts to give the gods. Because, you know, just as when you meet a new person, you might, you know, here's a song that I really like that you might like. Here's something that I heard about in one of your stories of a deity that I thought I should offer to you. I think that offerings are, first of all, pretty simple to do most of the time, and also pretty accessible. Many things you don't have to spend money on, unless you want to. But I think offerings are just a really great way to, you know, just say, I'm thinking of you and you're important to me. And I thought this might make you smile. At least that's the way I think of it. You know, Aphrodite gets little things every now and then, and usually Aww. Some beautiful thing. Like if I find something that's beautiful, great. If I have chocolate, she usually gets the chocolate for at least a little bit. And then I ask her for it back. But, sometimes, and,
maybe she blessed it.
Exactly. You know, sometimes it's like that. So I'm a big fan of offerings, and also just being really clear with folks who are new to this. They don't have to be big and grandiose things. You don't have to, you know, fill the room with flowers. I mean, lovely, but probably not necessary. A little love bomb-y. So, but I also think that one of the things that's important to say in offerings is that you're going to go online or go to books and see lists of offerings and go, oh, those are what I'm supposed to use. I think those are great starting points. And when you get to know a deity, there are other things, or sometimes you're inspired to do other things. So, you know, it's your relationship with them. If it works, it works.
Yeah. On that note of lists of offerings, like, yes, I agree. I think that there are deities you can Google to say, okay, what offerings do they like? Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you're developing that relationship with deity, it's not a bad idea to directly ask them yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You can say something like, hey, you know, I'd like to develop a relationship with you. Can you let me know in some way, shape, or form what type of offering that you would like? Mm-hmm. And then you kind of got to just keep an eye out. Perhaps maybe you keep seeing commercials for barley mm-hmm. for some reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe you find some flowers near your car. Maybe... So you just keep finding dollar bills on the ground mm-hmm. or something.
Exactly.
mm-hmm. You know, things like barley, flowers, honey, alcohol, even money mm-hmm. are very common offerings. Mm-hmm. Money is a little bit, usually different types of spirits will like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely also want to back up what you said. You don't need to have these grandiose things. You don't need to get a bouquet of flowers every other day or fill an entire bowl with honey. It could be something like a little... tiny handful of barley, which is very cheap, by mm-hmm. the way, at the store, mm-hmm. Very cheap to buy. It could be a flower you saw outside. It could be a little tiny dab of honey that you leave on your altar, or a little shot of alcohol. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be anything big. Please don't bankrupt yourself.
Oh gosh, no. Being a witch does not have to be expensive. I would also say that, you know, you brought up the word sacrifice a few times, which I absolutely love, and, you know, sacrifice to make holy, and, you know, we sacrifice things all the time and we don't always call it that. But another thing that I might bring into with the offerings is, you know, I will often leave on my altar, you know, something of importance to me, a necklace, some sort of piece of paper with like my sorrows, or, you know, et cetera. Like also like things that, you know, have a lot of meaning and maybe not necessarily on a list of, you know, things to give this particular deity, but it is important to our relationship that they have this in that moment.
Absolutely. I know you could probably tell I work with Hekate, mm-hmm. but
I do too. So I'm so excited. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, sacrifice it. It could be something like, let's say you want to work with Ekate, where once a month you go and you volunteer to work with the homeless, work at a shelter or handing out free lunch or giving out clothing, something like that. That's also a great way because of the population that she can work with and watches over, and a way for you to interact with it. You know, it could also be working at like an animal shelter, volunteering. She's big on dogs and black animals in general. Little things like that are also fantastic ways to nurture this type of relationship. Mm-hmm. And I want to point out that, and this is probably pretty obvious, but gotta state it anyway. Mm-hmm. If you are giving an offering for a deity, make sure you're putting your heart into it. Now, people can get burnt out. So, you know, sometimes you're not going to have 100% to give, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But let's say you are giving a piece of chocolate to a deity. So you go to the store and you buy a mixed bag with like 30 different pieces of, you know, Dove chocolate hearts or something. And every day or once a week, you want to give some chocolate. And, you know, the day comes up or like, okay, here's the day. And you just put it on your altar and you walk away. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the same concept of somebody trying to buy your affection, mm-hmm. but they don't really give you any other affection outside of a gift. Yeah. So like you're happy in the moment, but like the other half, the emotional part of that's missing. And so there's a disconnect there. That can happen with deities.
Easily.
So make sure you're not that. Again, it is very easy to get burnt out in the craft if you're doing something quite often, such as a some sort of sacrifice or offering. But yeah, just try to keep that in mind too. that definitely happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, again, like any relationship, you know, how am I showing up, right? Am I showing up and really being present or am I not? And it's okay. Like you said, like, of course, there's going to be days where that's just not going to happen or it's just not possible. But it's more about, for me, about consistency versus, you know, every day. So consistency for me, the way I look at that is that it's not, again, like I'm not necessarily doing it every day, but it's that I am returning to, returning back to the relationship, back to what, how I want to show up. And that returning is a really important part of this.
Absolutely. And also making sure that your deity you're working with is not always an afterthought.
Right. As well. Yes, please, please. Big yes. Especially ones that you want to cultivate a long-term relationship with, right? Like what are some ways to make this a sustainable practice? If you notice it's not really sustainable, you know, you might be in a part of life where that's not working for you. Your health might be in a way that that's not working for you, or your resources, et cetera. So, okay. So renegotiate with yourself and the deity and be like, hey, you know, I want to show up. This is what I can give right now. And again, it's communication, it's clarity. It is just being honest with what you can and can't do.
Exactly. So, okay. Here's a heavy hitter question for you. You ready?
Love it. I'm so excited.
All right. So how would somebody balance devotion to, let's say, multiple deities if they choose to work with more than one, especially if they are across different cultures?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I work with, primarily Greek pantheon within that, but I also work with the Norse. So here is what I would say is true. For me, at least, might not be for everybody. So again, I tend to go back to like the example of human relationships because it's something I understand mostly. And so I think about like polyamory. I actually think about the ways that I have similar commitments to different gods, but they look different, right? And so the way I navigate that is very clearly in setting up these relationships. What do you want from me? And what can I give to you? And then I look at all of those agreements over time and say, okay, is that still working? Is that not? Things like that. Sometimes when I feel like one god is getting a little bit more attention than the other ones, I balance it out by spending more time with another one. Sometimes that looks like putting little blocks of time on my calendar and putting aside like, I need to spend more devotional time with this one or that one. And recognizing just like humans, like sometimes some gods need more attention, sometimes they don't. But I just constantly am in sort of an evaluation communication with the gods to see what needs to shift or what doesn't. And to be fair, like in some of those interactions, you know, some gods have dropped off of my sort of like current cast of characters, I guess, or family. And across pantheons, I personally haven't had to negotiate any difficulties with this. And I think it's because I work with Iris, Aphrodite, Hecate, and the Norns. I work with other Greek gods too, but those are the four that have stuck it out. And the Norns aren't really, not necessarily deities, they're time itself. And so that feels like there's not really an opportunity for conflict with other gods if you're time and fate, or at least it hasn't happened for me. So I think that, you know, looking at how they might play together and how they might interact is always helpful. But also I think that if you're called to gods, you should work with them and see how it goes. And conflict happens in the best of relationships. And how do you meet that? How do you work with that? You know,
that's true. Mm-hmm. And if you sit there and if you do your homework and you approach it respectfully, then, you know, if a god's calling to you and the signs are hitting you over the head, then, you know, sometimes you can't say no to that.
I agree. I mean, I think that that's, you know, part of so many conversations about working with gods across cultures. You know, I think that I support folks working with gods from different cultures. I don't support people working with gods from other cultures and then saying they're experts in it when they haven't had lived experience in the cultural.
Background.
Yeah, I think that that's tricky. Yeah. But I think that your own personal navigation of that is fine. I think that because, you know, that's between you and the god, I'm not going to say anything. But if you're bringing out into the public and sort of engaging with it as though, you know, you've been buds forever, I think that's tricky and also appropriative.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So here is one more heavy hitter question as we get towards the end of this episode. What advice would you have for people who want to work with a deity, but they struggle with skepticism or being doubtful of the entire process?
I think that that is, I would say, first of all, that's so normal and healthy. I think that that is great. I think that honestly, that is a really good starting point for working with deities. One of the things that I tend to think about with magic is that magic is the suspension of disbelief. And I think that, I mean, it often is. There often is a part of me that has to say, okay, that doesn't seem like that could happen, but what if it could? And so I think approaching a relationship, if you are so called, even in the smallest, slightest way, is to approach with curiosity as though you are meeting somebody who excites you. Like as though you're meeting someone who could potentially be like the love of your life, if you want to use that phrase. How would you approach that? Approach with curiosity, approach with, you know, a willingness to ask questions, a willingness to meet them where they're at, a willingness to meet you where you're at in this whole relationship. But I think that is the best way to begin. At least offering yourself the possibility that there might be something beyond what you have already experienced in your life. And I think that's the best we can do as humans too.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think people have anything to lose.
No.
Too, if they are a little skeptical about it, but want to just try it out. Mm-hmm. I know I came into witchcraft and Wicca in a very skeptical, realistic mindset, but I still very much was interested in all of this and wanted to see if there was truth behind,
yes,
you know, what I'd heard the whisperings of in the woods, you know,
yes.
Like shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stuck with it for a long time, and I was doing all the projects and the assignments and really dedicating myself to it. Cause I was like, well, what do I have to lose? Maybe there is something to this.
Mm-hmm.
And over time I had multiple experiences that, the one big one I think of is actually related to a deity, where I couldn't deny that anymore. I will say it took me a lot longer than the people I was training with, and that's okay because everyone's journey is their own. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't have anything to lose.
No.
Why not try?
And also that it, you're not more valid in your magic, witchcraft, whatever you call it, for having a relationship with the deity. it's okay. You don't have to.
100%.
And I think that, you know, it's just as wonderful to build a relationship with the tree in your yard, with the ocean that you go to every week or whatever. You know, those are all great things too. And also, you know, we're also a part of this world. We're in relationship with the elements all the time. So, I mean, deities are something that are really helpful for some folks and also not for other folks. But if you want to try it, I agree with you. I don't think there's harm in it. And I think that more often than not, you're going to learn something about yourself that you might not have learned in another way.
I completely agree with that. I don't think you have to work with gods to be a witch or be involved in witchcraft. I think, you know, just as you said, sometimes the tree in your yard is all the connection that you need to really get you where you want to be going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely support animism. So you don't have to be a deist. Yeah, you don't. I think that honestly, when I say about, you know, why am I trying to work with a deity? I think that that's the question in all of this. You know, am I working with a deity because this is what I've always known from Christianity? So I'm just trying to do it in this way. Or are you actually trying to like build a relationship with a deity, which is, you know, not always the same thing. So I think it's all about like, consider your motives, consider your goals, and have fun, because the gods really do love to be celebrated and engaged with, at least in my experience. And they have taught me so much that I can't give them enough thanks for it. So
I love that. Yeah, same here. I wouldn't trade any of my experiences with deity for anything. I've really grown so much from it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, as just one little bit that I want to say is that, because Aphrodite is sort of like, hey. I never wanted to work with her because I thought she was superficial and, you know, just kind of a fluffy bunny Barbie bit. And those were my words back then. And then I realized that encountering my own relationship to love and worth and beauty and initiation is the hardest work I've ever done. And that continues to be that. So not all gods are going to maybe teach you the things you think you need to learn. But stay open to it, because it could change your life.
So for those who want to learn a little bit more about this topic that we talked about, do you have any suggested resources they could look into?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be too self-serving, but I will say that I've written quite a few books on various deities. And they're part of the Pagan Portals series at Moon Books, and they're meant to just be introductions to sort of encourage you to like maybe explore further. So I've written books on Aphrodite, Iris, on the Norns, on Gaia. I have Artemis is coming out April 1st, and Circe is coming out in November of 2024, and then others are coming in subsequent years. But I think that looking at, I would start sometimes with, I would say, first of all, start with source texts and things like that. You know, if you're interested in the Greek, go to Theogony and go to the Iliad and go to the Odyssey and, you know, read different translations of stories and meet the gods there. Meet the gods in their various forms and stories and soap operas, if you know anything about the Greeks. So, which is why I love them so much. But starting there, I think, is always good. There are plenty of books that sort of not only give historical context for the gods and their stories, but also give personal experiences. And I think having a balance of that is really helpful. The one thing I would caution folks with is that so many translations of in so many pantheons were done by old white dudes, and that can create bias in some of the stories, or has, I should say. And I would encourage folks to find a whole bunch of translations, and there are many more that don't involve the old academic dudes. And so I would encourage you to look up different versions of the stories too, because, you know, we sometimes don't want to have just one version that's heavily influenced by patriarchy. So,
Yeah, not to mention UPG is a thing too.
Yes. And I think
unverified personal gnosis, for those who are not sure what that means.
Right. And also there's a lot of validity in that, but also in like not comparing yourself to someone else's personal gnosis and saying like, oh, I'm not doing it right. I think that that's totally true and good to watch out for.
Exactly. So one more question for you. If you could give a piece of advice to beginner, it doesn't have to be about what we talked about today. Mm-hmm. What would that piece of advice be?
The piece of advice I give to everyone these days is to just try it. I think for me, I've noticed a lot of folks, and myself included, when I was starting out, I was so nervous to get it wrong, whatever it was, whether it was a spell, a ritual, et cetera, et cetera. Just go for it. Just try the thing and see what happens. The truth is that you're probably not going to die and no one's going to get harmed in the process. So I would encourage folks to try what they try. And in doing so, you are going to learn to trust yourself and to know what is actually something that you want to pursue or not. But if you don't ever try, that will probably limit where you go next. So give it a try. Magic is supposed to be fun. And so go have fun.
That's pretty sound advice. I love that.
Yes. Thanks.
Well, Irisana, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
This was such a wonderful discussion. I feel like I could have kept asking mm-hmm. you a million more questions.
Mm-hmm. We have more to say, I think, but this is a good start.
I believe so. Yes. I mean, hey, you talk about deity and you're just opening.
Oh, so many things. So many things. Love the gods.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So for those who want to get in contact with you or hear more about what your books are or anything, how mm-hmm. can people find you on the internet? Where can they buy your books? Tell us where to find you.
Where to find me. So I don't think any other Iris Sonias. So it's very easy to just Google me and you'll find a bunch of things. But I've also tried to consolidate things. I have a website. It's irisanyamoon.com. It has a whole bunch of things. It has my classes. It has my books. It has pieces of my writing. And also you can sign up for a newsletter that comes out every new moon-ish. And that's the central location. In terms of social media, I am on Facebook. I am on Instagram. I have a growing TikTok account, which is full of strange meandering things, but I love it and it's fun. I also have a lot of things on YouTube. So you can find a lot of presentations that I've done. You can find trances that I've led that you can listen to. And that is a great place to sort of get to know sort of my teaching style or my presentation style a little bit. And you can find my books on anywhere at all the various, you know, booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, et cetera. But also my website. And also I have a bookshop.org storefront if you want to look for that, but you do you. And most folks have said that they could ask their local bookstores to order it. And Moon Books books do get out. They do get around. So I've seen them in multiple countries. So you could probably order them directly too.
Amazing. Yeah. Yes. Please, please, please ask your local metaphysical shops to carry books that you're interested in. They are usually more than happy mm-hmm. to do that.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, I think that those are the best ways. And also I really love to chat with folks. So you can contact me through my website or through all my social media and chances are I will get back to you. So.
Amazing. And I will put all of that in the bio as well for this episode. And if anybody is interested in finding me, you can find me on Instagram at Seeking Witchcraft, or I have a personal Instagram if anybody's interested. It's usually literally just me at the gym, but it's at Spells and Kettlebells.
Love it.
I'm on Twitter at Seek Witchcraft, Facebook at Seeking Witchcraft Podcast. There is a Facebook group called Witches Seeking Witchcraft if anyone's interested. And if anyone would like to support the show, you could do so at patreon.com/seekingwitchcraft.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ashley. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about this topic with me. I mean, like I said, I think we could have just kept going all day.
We could have, yes. I think that we would close everything down, yes.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you again for coming on, and thank you to the listeners, and hope you all enjoy the rest of your day or evening when you're listening to this.
Yeah, thanks, folks. Enjoy your devotions.
Yes, yes. See you later. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.